good afternoon. This is Glenn Coble. You're listening to the show called A Progressive Life. And we try to talk about positive things, about living a progressive life. And today we're going to have a gentleman on, and I'm not going to go too far into talking about him until he gets here. But Mike Larson is his name, and he's going to be on. Mike is a friend that I met especially when I was running for political office, state representative. My district that I was running in included Union County. And Union County is where Mike lives. He lives in Plain City down there. And we started shooting the bull. And as a matter of fact, here he comes now. Hello, Mike. How you doing?
Good. Does it matter?
Green one. Or orange one. Orange one.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to put him on the orange microphone. We're going to talk about things that I was going to ask you a couple of questions before we got on the air, but I'm going to have to ask you now.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure whether you formally announced or whether you have informally announced what you're going to do with your political life.
Well, I guess it's formal. I'm definitely running for Congress. So.
Okay. And you're going to be running against, there look like there are three or four other people that are running in the primary.
There are two other Democrats in the race right now.
Okay.
We've made a few appearances together. They're both good people, smart people.
One of them's a lawyer. I think the female is a lawyer. Is she not?
I believe she's a paralegal.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, that I ran for office because you supported me in my run for office. What in the world are you thinking? Let's just leave it at that. Let me give a little introduction. Mike has done everything under the sun. I say that in my bio, that I've done everything under the sun, but I'm not very good at most of them. Mike has been pretty good at things. You're a stand-up comedian. You've appeared on Leno. You've helped Jackie Spears
uh-huh.
as her campaign coordinator,
communication director.
You've done all sorts of things, including mentoring inmates. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background?
Well, I would say my primary career, the last 30 years of my life, has been as a television writer and producer. Wrote on a whole bunch of shows.
My favorite, Bill Maher.
Right? Also on the Drew Carey Show, a proud Ohioan. I got my start doing stand-up comedy, but that led to a writing career, which was great. And then I took a break for a few years in there to go back to Washington to work for Jackie Spear. Jackie's one of my closest friends, my daughter's godmother, and when she got elected to Congress, she said, any chance I could talk you into putting your career on hold? And my wife and I jumped at it.
She's in the middle of a lot of...
She is on the Intelligence Committee now, yeah. So
I see her almost every night.
yeah. So she's been in those, in the... the confidential meetings that are going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the impeachment free-for-all. Yeah.
In the impeachment. And, right, she told me the other day that whenever Jim Jordan starts to speak, she closes her eyes and pictures me in that seat instead. She said it's the only thing that helps her get through it.
So is that kind of a backhanded endorsement?
Right. And I talk to people. If people don't know who Jackie Spear is, you should check her out. Spear is spelled S-P-E-I-E-R.
Yeah, I noticed that today.
She was, she's kind of the gold standard as far as a congressperson who takes care of their constituents.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the big disappointments when I moved here. I mean, I wasn't inclined to support a conservative Republican congressman anyway, but I was shocked at what little regard he has for his constituents. He hasn't had a town hall meeting in years. One of the only members of Congress who doesn't have open town hall meetings.
Well, he came here about 3 or 4 years ago and stood on the porch of the Harding House
right.
and gave a speech and people tried to talk him down, and he just totally ignored anything anybody said.
I went and saw him in Marysville earlier this month, but it was at a conservative group.
How'd they let you in?
Well, I joined. They said you have to be a member, and I said, "How much to be a member?" And they said, "Nothing." And I said, "All right, then, count me in." So I guess I am now part of the Marysville conservative group. But you know, he doesn't even talk about issues. He only talks about partisanship. This was supposed to be on immigration. All he talked about the entire time was Trump and Adam Schiff. You know, and it's like, that's not what, I mean, that's fine, you're dealing with that, but what do you care about? What do you think people in the district care about? It's remarkable, it really is.
Well, he got in as the leader of the, I've forgotten the name of the conservative.
Oh, the Freedom Caucus.
Freedom Caucus, yeah. He got in as basically the leader of the Freedom Caucus, and I was required by my boss when I was working I was required that I should go to a house meeting that she was holding for him.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to tell you this. I didn't like him from the day I met
him.
He was kind of a rude, gruff, I'm going to kick your derriere type of person.
Right.
He is a former wrestler, and he was a phenomenal wrestler.
He was. He was an NCAA champion. But he just gives off the vibe of like every... in fact, the other night I watched The Karate Kid with my daughter. She'd never seen it before. And the kids from I think it was the Kubakai
dojo,
which was like the evil dojo.
Yeah.
And I thought, see, that Jordan would have been on that have been in the Ralph Macchio dojo.
And he'd have swept the legs and broke the guy's knees.
Right. But, you know, but that's what kind of what led me into this race is, you know, you may have heard, you know, Jordan has so upset even Republicans that this time around there is a very prominent Republican who is saying that he's going to run in November as an independent.
Oh, that's
good. Which, when I heard that, I said, well, now maybe there's a lane for a Democrat now. Then could we?
Right.
We routinely get 40% in this district, which is, you know, of course, a losing number in a two-way race, but in a three-way race, that's a pretty good number.
Well, when I ran, it was not so good.
Right.
Everybody got between 30 and 40%.
Right.
And 40 was Cordray, and he was our hope.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So so that's really what interested me. People have asked me to run, and you know, there is virtue just in running and getting out, you know, progressive issues and talking to people about, you know, the things that are important to you, trade unions and climate change or whatever. But I wasn't too enthusiastic about just being the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
But then when this other news came in and people started looking at the race and saying, well, there's a possibility here if we have a good candidate and a strong campaign. So that's why I decided to jump in.
Well, as you know, or maybe don't know, I was the sacrificial lamb.
Right.
As a state representative, when I first said, I'll run, but don't you have somebody better? They said, no, we'd love to have you. You'd be wonderful. And they really supported me until I put my name on the line. And that was the last I heard of the Democratic Party, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But, I didn't really want to be a sacrificial lamb, but I'm glad I had the opportunity to say my piece. And
absolutely, so you can't let someone run unopposed. That's just not democracy. And one way or another, you know, even if you're in an overwhelmingly Democratic district, it's important to have the other side express themselves.
Yeah, and that's the only way that our voters can get educated is to listen to those people. Now, my opponent was pro-life. She and very pro guns,
yes.
And those were the two areas that I felt we needed to work on.
Uh-huh.
I like to tell my friends who ask me if I'm pro-abortion. I am not pro-abortion.
Right. Well, your Tracy Richardson, who you're talking about, not only was pro-life, she was favored the Human Life Amendment, which if that were the law, my daughter would not be alive today. Our daughter was born through the help of in vitro.
Yeah.
And they're against even in vitro.
Yeah, and I don't know. My grandsons are in vitro.
Right. Many, many people are. I'm sure tens of thousands of Ohioans are. And that is when people say I'm pro-life and you think you know what it means, and then you say, no, it means that my 13-year-old daughter never would have been born. That's
right.
That's what they call pro-life, which is ridiculous, and people don't know that, and people need to know that.
And she happened to vote for the six-week rule, and a lot of women don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks.
Especially a 13-year-old girl who's, you know, raped by an uncle or something.
Right.
You know, by the time she found out she was pregnant, she couldn't have an abortion, and then would have to spend that entire, you know, really the rest of her life, people looking at her like she was to blame.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so cruel.
Yeah.
And it's such an example of politicians who vote for a slogan, you know, instead of really looking at what the consequences are of these things. You know, it's easy to say, you know, Second Amendment, but then you say, but really, like, so weapons that were designed to use on a battlefield, you think civilians should have? They should be able to outgun the cops? You really think that's the Second Amendment? You think that's what Thomas Jefferson was thinking about when they were talking about the Constitution, that someday we should make sure that any idiot could have more firepower than a cop?
Yeah.
No, they never. That's not what they were talking about.
Well, and we do have rules against firearms.
Of course we do.
And so many of my gun friends say, well, you can't have rules against guns or we'll not have any guns. We don't have bazookas.
But
we
right.
don't allow machine guns.
And the Second Amendment doesn't even say the word guns. It
no.
talks about arms.
Right.
And, you know, an F-14 is an arm. A nuclear bomb is an arm.
That's right.
You can't have those. That's the thing. That argument is just so ridiculous. I live out in the country. Of course people have a right to have guns, and they need guns. You need to, you know, protect my pet chickens from those horrible raccoons. But, you know, it's just ridiculous when you think of, you know, these weapons that are only used for killing people. That's the reason why the AR-15, which is the same design originally of the M-16 that people used in Vietnam, and it was made so that you can mow down enemies indiscriminately.
I was, as you know, I was in the Army.
Right.
And in basic training, we went from the M1 to the M16,
mm-hmm.
and they trained us on both weapons. The M16 was so much faster at killing.
Oh, yeah.
Because they would let us put it on automatic, which, by the way, you can really, if you're sharp at guns, I'm told you can make those guns automatic.
Right.
Well, with a bump stock.
Well, that guy in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all saw that.
But you could pull the trigger and it would fire everything that's in your magazine in a matter of a couple of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have, I saw that they have those circular magazines like the old Tommy guns that fire 100 rounds, and you can get that off in a minute.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's crazy. Well, what? Tell me what your plan is. How are you going to start? I'm sure you need people on the ground. I'm sure you need to raise money. That was the thing I was worried
sure.
at.
Yeah, we need to raise money, obviously. And I've started doing that and have been very, I mean, just in the last week I've started and people have responded. It's pretty humbling, you know, when your friends give you money, but when like just a stranger out of the blue sends you $20. That's awesome.
That
you
is
know,
cool.
But it also makes you go, oh, man, I gotta do this. I gotta do this correctly. You know, these people are giving me their money. You know,
don't have to raise just a couple of thousand dollars for this particular position.
No. Well, the primary will probably be around $200,000 to get through the primary, and then you know who knows for the general election. My campaign will be different than normal campaigns. I've worked on a lot of campaigns. I really love reaching out to people in new ways, finding new ways to reach people. So we will be doing a lot of digital campaigning, which hits younger voters, which are who we're after. We're after people who have maybe never voted before and have really only have started thinking about politics in the age of Trump and don't like it. I mean, those are people we like or we want to talk to. So we'll be doing a lot of digital The primary is March 17th, so that campaign is in the dead of winter. So it's not like there's going to be a lot of door-knocking opportunities anyway.
Well, you don't have very much time either because you file, I think, on the 11th of December.
The 18th of December, right. It's a three-month, which is great. I wish all elections were three months.
Too.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll be out there in my... my Carhartt overalls knocking on doors, but I can't very well ask many volunteers to do that for me. So we'll be out.
And primary time is really not as much knocking on doors as it is getting your message and your face and your name out. As when you go into the general, you got to knock on the door.
Right. Well, and this time around, obviously a presidential primary, so. Most of the candidates that are in the race now for president will probably still be around by March 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those campaigns will be turning out their voters. And so my job is to make sure that those people go and understand that whether you're voting for Biden or Beto or Kamala or whoever, that Mike Larson is who you're picking for Congress. So, and that is why I think running a digital heavy campaign is good. We're able to reach those people based on the preferences they've already shown online, you know, for different candidates or whatever. So it's an opportunity for us to reach them. And it is a lot less expensive than television or even direct mail.
And television in this district is pretty non-existent until you get up by the lake.
Well, it's fragmented. There's five markets, you know. Down here, Marion is probably still Columbus TV.
It would have to be.
Right, yeah. I get Columbus where I am in Union County, and then Lima is its own market, and then Champaign County, they're getting it from Dayton, and then you got Toledo and Cleveland up north.
Yeah.
So if you want to, you know, put an ad in the evening news, you got to buy it five times.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too expensive. I don't see that happening one way or another for us. Well, we'll probably do some radio, maybe some postcards going out towards the end, but we're going to do as me personally showing up places and digital. So
I think that that's what I tried to do, is me showing up places.
Yes.
I obviously didn't do a great job, but I tried. And I think that you're going to be able to reap some of the benefits of all the ill will that has come about by our current president.
I agree. I think that the combination of Trump and Jordan and their stupid tariffs that are killing farmers,
right?
The complete neglect that Congressman Jordan has for his district, people are open to the argument. And even people, I think, I've been in a union almost my whole life. When I was 14, I joined the Teamsters because I got a job as a peanut vendor at a stadium, and it was a union job. And I've been there ever since. And I was able to move to Ohio with my family, which was my plan when my wife and I married, to move back where she's from. But I was able to because of my union. The Writers Guild let me take a pension at 52, which was awesome.
Yeah.
So we jumped at it. We moved to Ohio, which we always wanted to do, so my daughter could go to school with her cousins. And the unions are so big in Central Ohio, and they really were. But I think a lot of those older white voters who left the Democrats in 2016 to go for Trump because either they believed his promises or they were tired of the Clintons or whatever it was, they're still reachable. I think most of them, they're not, you know, ignorant people. They thought the stuff he was promising was real, and now they realize he's a fraud. And so I think a lot of them are going to be coming back.
Well, now, two things that you mentioned there, one of which is the union thing. When I was running against Tracy, she got huge bucks from unions,
right,
which completely shocked me.
Yeah.
And even though I had gotten several endorsements from unions, I didn't get the bucks from them.
No, she got a lot of help from the building trades, partly, I think, because of the building boom that's going on in Marysville, where she was on the city council. But a lot of that is them just back in the winter. You know, they know in a district like this. And you didn't do, but if you compare your vote totals to what you know, Janet Garrett or any of our statewide candidates got, they were about the same. That was pretty much the high water mark for Democrats that year.
Yeah.
You know,
I was not quite as good, but still, and I wasn't as well known.
Right.
You were also talking about the farmers. When I was covering Union, especially Union County, I went to several of the farmers markets that you guys had right downtown, and I would walk around, and they were all farmers, and I would say to them, you know, my spiel, and I would say, are you comfortable with voting for a Democrat or something along that line? And almost every one of the younger ones said to me, absolutely. Because they were starting to feel those tariffs.
Right.
The older ones were not so willing to go along with that because they'd been voting Republican all their lives. But the younger ones said, we're with you.
Well, and you've got to talk to, I mean, I've been talking and really mostly just listening to everyone.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I will be in Logan County sitting down having lunch with farmers. I was up in Lorain a couple days ago. Listening to some retired labor leaders up there. So just kind of going around and being educated by everyone. But, you know, these tariffs are not only a temporary problem. Trump and Jordan killed the soybean market. They're not coming back.
Yeah,
those farmers, they'll tell you. They're not coming back. Australia moved in and took that market. Australia's selling soybeans to China now. Hmm. So, you know, it's certainly not going to come back to the degree it did.
Right.
And then that coupled with climate change. I mean, look, this year it rained so hard they couldn't plant the beans, and then they got it in, and then there was a heat wave that killed the seedlings.
Well, back in your home state of California, and my son lives out there, they're watching to the south because the fires are burning outside of Los Angeles.
Yeah, believe me, the places where I spent every summer as a little boy, and my Italian uncles had farms up in the Napa area, and they burnt 4 years ago, and now they're burning again. So yeah, it's heartbreaking. But
there's a winery up there that was really famous,
100-year-old vine. Well,
and it's burned to the ground. That broke my heart, since my son is a vintner.
Right. But one of the things I think we have to talk to farmers is to find new cash crops for them that don't depend on them having to sell it to China. You know, marijuana is legalized across this country.
First thing I was thinking.
Ohio has the best soil in the world. These farmers could be growing a cash crop that uses very little water, that's very low maintenance, and has a market for it here. Mm-hmm. They don't sell if we have another idiot president someday, which I'm sure we will, who thinks there's a point to be made, but with tariffs and trade wars, they can still survive that. And so those are some of the things I've been talking to farmers about. And I've had a few farmers who are very much older than me and very conservative. And the whole idea of legalizing marijuana goes completely against how they were raised. And
Reefer
I get that.
Madness is in the back of their heads.
Yeah. Right. And I get that. And I say that's fine. But look at it as a crop.
It's just a business.
I don't like kale, but if I could make money growing it, sure as hell would grow it. You know, I think we just have to expand our horizons. This bean corn rotation that American farmers have been on for the past 20, 30 years, it's a losing proposition. We grow corn that we don't even eat. We grow corn for the cattle, and we grow soybean for the Chinese.
Well,
and it's like, how about growing things that we can buy here?
And hemp was banned now because of its relationship to marijuana.
Right.
Hemp was banned, and yet there are so many things that hemp does better than normal cotton or anything else.
Right, right. And it was just this knee-jerk thing.
That, again,
politicians voting for slogans instead of knowing what it actually means. There was no reason hemp ever should have been banned.
No.
It's a harmless crop. It just happens to be in the same...
Makes the strongest rope.
Family.
All sorts of great things.
Yeah. Right. But some knee-jerk politician, you know, thought... But if I can say while I'm on that, anyone who lives in this district, or even those, I would love for you to reach out to me. My website is ohmike.org. It's very easy. and talk to me. Tell me what your concerns are. What, you know, I'm talking to small business people, students, retired people. Jim Jordan, the reason he doesn't do town hall meetings is because he doesn't care. He wants, if you're not a Fox News camera or a bank of microphones, he doesn't care. All he does is talk to all he does is talk.
And usually it's at a very high level of volume.
Yeah, right. And just this toxic partisanship. I mean, I'm proud to be a Democrat and call myself a progressive, but I have just as many friends who are Republicans as Democrats. We argue, we have fun. There's no, I don't, but he just channels this hate.
There's a difference, though, and you are a politician like I'm a politician, and one thing that he doesn't do, but you and I have done, we use our ears. Mm-hmm. We listen.
Right.
And that's way more important than talking.
Absolutely. No, and that's the whole point, like going out to meet these farmers. It is so less important that they hear what I have to say than it is for me to hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole reason of running in a district like this is to take care of the people in it, and the biggest industry in this district is agriculture.
Yeah, of course.
And Trump and Jordan killed the soybean market, so now what? We got to rebuild it, and we can't let, they're not going to rebuild it.
Right.
You know, someone else has to move in and tell those guys to take a hike and then work with the farmers and business people to figure out what is our next phase. And I think it's by encouraging and helping the farmers bring in a diversity of crops that they can sell domestically. It would be better for their soil if they change the crop more often. And, you know, I would hate to see them think that all they can do is fight for a smaller and smaller share of the soybean market.
Yeah. Well, the idea of supporting industries that are going downhill,
mm-hmm.
like coal.
No, I thought you were going to say radio.
But coal is,
right.
is something
right.
that they haven't done very well on either.
Right. And those coal workers have a horrible job. That is, you know, they die younger. Their children are less educated because of the way the coal
and now
industry
they're declaring
has treated them.
In southeastern,
right?
Ohio. Yeah.
And if you know, years ago, the congresswoman I worked for, we had a company in our district that made fuel from algae, and they, in order to do it at scale, they needed massive. Basically reservoir, basically like an old hilltop coal operation or a quarry, mm-hmm. is what they did. So they went into West Virginia, and in fact they have one set up now in West Virginia, and they're making this fuel from algae. I think they have a contract through Chevron or something.
Yeah,
and
they're advertising right now.
They were able to employ not only the ex-coal miners, but tens of thousands of other people. And doing something that's clean, that's renewable. So there are options out there. The problem is you have politicians like Jim Jordan who would rather have the political benefit of saying they're trying to kill coal. They're after you instead of saying, hey, let's find a solution. You know, I'm sure the lamplighters were furious when electricity came in. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure people were saying, "My dad's a lamplighter. You can't have an electric street light." But thank God, cooler heads prevailed. I think the same thing with coal and in things like climate change. I think we need more people in universities who can afford it and aren't driving themselves into debt by doing it, so that when they come out, they have those solutions for us.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to have all of them now.
We have thousands of very bright young people. We've seen several of them running for office.
Right, right.
And why not support that type of
Absolutely.
Thought?
Absolutely. I mean, we think of what we did with the Manhattan Project when we wanted to find a nuclear weapon. we should have a Manhattan Project for climate change. Get the yeah. smartest people in the country across industries, fund them well, and let them find solutions for us.
Well, Jim wouldn't be able to fund them because of because of the group he's with, but
right.
they don't want to spend anything. And that's one of the things that drives me crazy. I talk quite often why progressive isn't a bad word. Now, in Marion, in this area, there are a lot of people that don't like progressives. But the very first progressive was the guy that figured out how to light fire. And it goes right through all the way up to the new stem cell research.
Right.
They hated those people, too, for a while.
Right.
But now they're saving people's lives and making life a lot more comfortable for many.
Progress is inevitable.
Absolutely.
But it can go in both directions. There is bad progress,
sure.
too. And I think bad progress comes when we try to hang on to the past. I've changed jobs many times in my life. I tend to bet on myself and take a chance. But I also had a lot of advantages. I was able to go to college. I was born a white male in America, which I don't care what anyone says, there are benefits to that.
Hey,
I got pulled over the other day and didn't get a ticket. If you want to talk about white privilege, I have many friends who would African American, Latino men, when I tell them that happens, their head explodes.
Yeah,
they're like, what do you mean you didn't get a ticket? You weren't speeding? Oh, I was speeding. I just told him I was in a hurry to pick up my daughter from trombone lesson, and he let me go.
Didn't they pull their guns?
Right. So no, but I just think we need to encourage everyone, but especially young people, and let them know that there's a role for the government to play in progress and advancement, and education. Now, also, people think that this idea that college tuition should be free is some crazy left-wing thing. College was free when I went. I went to a state college, and there was no tuition.
In California.
Right. I did pay some book fees and things,
sure.
but there was no tuition. The whole point of having state colleges was so that we could have things like teachers, who they're not going to make any money after they graduate. They don't have a lot of money going in, so let's give them a darn education so they can go teach our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then the idea that, that we had to cut taxes, give all the money back to the wealthy, because Lord knows they need to hoard more money.
Yeah.
And then make the prospective teacher pay a few thousand dollars for something that should have been free. It's just ridiculous.
Well, there was a gentleman, and I can't remember his name. It starts with an E, but it doesn't make any difference. Yeah. He was a manufacturer, I believe, of pillows or something that goes on your bed. Anyway, he was a multi-millionaire, and he went on TED Talks and talked how I can only drive one car at a time.
Right.
Why should I make millions and millions of dollars?
Right.
And they wouldn't run his TED Talk.
Oh, it's funny.
And you can still get it.
It's interesting.
But that way, even TED Talks was a little bit too
well, and people don't understand. Right. Like when we talk about things like estate taxes, and people think, oh, no, that means you're going to take the family farm. No, it does not. if you are rich, God bless you. That's great. If you have a chain of restaurants and you make millions of dollars a year, that's good. Good for you. Good for you. Pay your fair share. We're happy. It's the hoarders that we're talking about for wealth tax. There's people who get, $100, $200 million a year, not off work, off dividends mm-hmm. of their holdings. Those are the people that we should make hoarding money so costly to them that instead they invest that money. Instead they open a factory, or they start a charity, or they give out scholarships, or they feed the world.
Yeah.
And if you want to hoard your money, you got to pay up.
Yeah.
And I'd say I would be happy exempting whatever. You could exempt the first $50 million people have and still have plenty of money to get to pay for education and college and finding solutions to climate change, retraining mine workers to have other careers. You know, we could fund healthcare.
Yeah.
And nobody's family farm is going to be hurt. No one's family business. Their supermarket. That's not the kind of wealth we're talking about.
It's kind of like the gun thing, where there's so much fear put out by the people that want to maintain guns or something. There's so much fear about taking an extra percent away from a guy that makes $100 million a year, which there are people. I've done some research on some of these executives that there are people that make $100 million a year anyway, but there is so much fear that's put out by those people that if you take that away, you'll take away the incentive.
Well, and the same thing about how, I don't know the exact figures, but how, you know, 80% of wealth is owned by the top 0.1% of Americans. The same is true, I found out, for guns, especially for assault rifles, for military-grade weapons. 80% of the military-grade weapons that are owned by less than 1% of Americans. Mm-hmm. There are those few, you know, gun collectors, enthusiasts, whatever, you know, conspiracy theorists, whatever they are, and they are making all the other gun owners, who are the hunter, the person who has a handgun for protection, they're using them as a tool to make sure that these guys get to have their military weapons.
Well, I think I read somewhere that only 23 to 25% of the American public owns a gun.
Oh, I would think about, I mean, certainly in this area, in more rural areas, almost everyone does. If you have a farm or a field. Or you go hunting or whatever, or even just, you know, you... Some of these people who just live in remote areas say, you know, if someone did come, the cops ain't coming. I get that. Absolutely. If I thought I needed a gun to protect my wife and daughter, hell yeah, I'd go get a gun.
You got to protect your pet chickens.
I do. I have a, it's funny, I had a BB gun to kind of scare off the raccoons, and then one day a raccoon came and went after my dog, and so I had to hit the raccoon with my BB gun. It was a horrible night. It was a horrible night. But no, I totally, no one wants to take people's guns away. It's the guns that never were meant to be on the streets in the first place. That's all.
What, tell me you're not going to give up your stand-up comedian stuff.
Oh, I enjoy doing, I do comedy now like, you know, Mike Huckabee was in a rock band. You know, it's fun. Yeah. I'm good at it. I've done it since I was very young. So I still do charity stuff all the time. I'll continue to do it.
For my listeners, you were on Leno a couple of times.
I did the Tonight Show a couple times. Yeah. I also got
pretty good.
HBO and Showtime. And I had a nice little career opening for famous comedians, which was great. So I got to work with most of my comedy heroes over the course of my career.
So is that how you impressed your very pretty wife?
Oh, definitely. I used to, my friends used to make fun of me when I was single because I had my back when we had VHS tapes, but I'd have the tape from my Tonight Show set, and it would just sit on top of my television. So, you know, if I had a woman come over, she could say, "What's this?" And I'd say, "Oh, how did that get out there?" Well, I guess if you want to see it, you know.
Are you still connected with Bill Maher at all?
No, other than that, I have a lot of friends from those, you know, from when I worked on the show. Really, really smart people on his writing staff. Well, so, you know, I've certainly talked all to the friends. I was never close with Bill. He was my boss. Yeah. He was a good boss, but it's not like we were ever, you know, social friends or anything.
Well, your type of humor and your type of attitude is so close. When I watch Bill Maher, I can kind of see how you can fit right in.
Yeah, I mean, I love writing jokes. I mean, when I was a kid, jokes were like magic to me. I didn't know how anyone ever thought of those things, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, that is like my electric guitar. I love just sitting down and tinkering with ideas, and you know, I use it in my politics. I certainly will in this campaign, you know, for Janet Garrett's race. We did this puppet version of Jim Jordan.
I love that puppet.
So, you know, I still talk to the guy who did that, a guy from who worked for the Muppets and the Jim Henson Company.
I'm hoping that puppet comes back.
So we will do something. We have that puppet still, but we will certainly have a sense of humor. I think it's just really important to reach people the way they want to be reached. Not just shout at them or preach at them, but also... For me, the two worst things about Donald Trump are that he doesn't laugh at himself and he doesn't like dogs. You know, those if you told me those two things, I could have told you his character from the get-go, even without the lying or whatever. You know, the ability to laugh at ourselves is the thing that makes us human. So I think we could use more of it in politics, not the kind of humor like insulting someone else or tearing somebody down, but right. You know, poking fun at ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that you will need people on the ground. How can somebody get a hold of you?
Yes.
if they want to, you know, help you out?
Please do. And even if you don't support me, even if you just have something to say, please reach out to me. My website is ohmike.org. It's the official one's still being built, but there's a place there where you can get in touch with me. Also, Larson for Congress on Facebook, which is Larson is LARSEN. And then Twitter, I am Write Mike Larson. So it's WRITE Mike Larson.
I forgot to tell anybody what our phone number was. I was going to invite phone calls, but we got talking so much. We got about 7 minutes left. So if you'd like to talk to Mike, give us a call, 740-383-9944. I'm sorry, Mike. I completely forgot about inviting the audience in. I mentioned in my little Twitter last night that they could call in, but when I don't give out the phone number, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Well, are you planning to... do you think you can get Jackie Spears to help you if you...
Oh, yeah. This? Jackie will help. Sure.
She doesn't have a whole lot of time right now.
No, no. She's busy. I mean, I'm sure she will help. We've talked a little bit. I mean, the way she helps me the most is just being my mentor when it comes to politics. You know, I can call and ask a question. She knows more than I do. But I'm pretty sure she'll come out here at some point. Less for me than to see her goddaughter, my daughter Marianne. Yeah. So they stay in touch. Cool. They kind of text back and forth, so I'm sure we'll get her out here at some point. And if she does, I would we'll make sure to have an event that isn't necessarily a political event; that's just a community thing, because people should meet her. She has an amazing story, but also just shows what a public servant really is. Mm-hmm. It's someone who really, really does care about the public they serve. It's not made up,
right?
You know,
yeah, it's not a stepping stone.
No,
to get
well,
ahead.
Sherrod Brown's a great example of that. You know, I mean, the truth is, I am not a political fan of John Kasich, but John Kasich strikes me as a guy who really cares about the people he represents. He has different views than I do. You know, it's not a Democratic or Republican thing. It's just people who see public service as an honorable thing.
Yeah, you know? And let's hope we have more of those get elected in the upcoming thing. Now, I was going to ask you, and now it dropped out of my head. That's what happens when you get old like me.
Yeah.
It'll drop out. And I know that my regular listeners know that I was thinking about running for what you're running for, and I just decided to give the thought up because I'm too old. Not that... Age means that you can't be good at it. It just means that I've got other things I want to do before I get out from underneath.
Yeah, it really is a big time suck. And, you know, the district is so big. Just to get, you know, I've been reaching out to, you know, there's 14 counties. I've been reaching out to each one, just telling people, let me know when you can meet me. I'll drive out there and meet you. But
it might be a 6-hour drive.
Right. I mean, that's why I try to when I'm, you know, like I'm in Logan tomorrow, which actually isn't very far. That's an easy one. But while I'm out there, I'll try to, you know, meet up with other people I know, just go drop in on places.
I was surprised how far east on Lake Erie the little hook goes on this district.
So, right. So if you look, the district is shaped like a duck, right? And yep. So the duck's bill reaches out, and you know why it reaches out? Because at the far end of that
be a lot of
duck
Republicans.
Bill, no, it's no. Even better for a Republican, prisons.
Oh.
They go around a prison so that they get to count. Jim Jordan gets to count those inmates as residents of his district. But, of course, they're not allowed to vote. So it's perfect for a politician that nobody likes, right? You get people that you get counted for, but they won't vote. And when they do vote, when incarcerated people do vote, either they're not felons or for some other reason, they have to vote in the place they were arrested, where they live, not for the prison, even though the census counts them as living there. Uh-huh. So it's like the perfect situation, you know, for Jordan, because most of these men, and you know, like I said before, I work a lot with men in prison, and most of them, you know, the prisons tend to be in these rural areas, but of course the high crime areas tend to be in the urban areas. So
and if the demographics that I've seen are correct, that a lot more African Americans are in prison whites.
Yes.
Then and a lot more African Americans vote Democratic.
Right. Oh yeah. No, that's all
they
part
love them
of the
have them tucked away.
Yeah. No. It's such a and you know that was another thing. You know, people talk about, you know, well, you know, you should lose your right to vote if you're convicted of a felon and or a felony, and it's like, why that constitutional right? Right. Why arbitrarily did we say, okay, your right to vote, which is our constitutional right, not your right to free, you know, to worship freely. You still get to do that. Every other right you have for the most part, but you know, it was clearly just another way for Republicans to game the voting system.
Yeah,
you know, because they can't win a fair fight. If this were a 50-50 district, Jim Jordan wouldn't have a chance. He would still be coaching wrestling. He never would have gotten elected to anything.
And next time we're on, we might talk about that, whether he'd be coaching wrestling or not.
He may not have been allowed to still coach. Good point.
We got about 1 minute. Is there anything you want to wrap up before we get off the air?
No, I would just again...
give your addresses and things.
Yeah. Please reach out to me at ohmike.org. Let me know what you're thinking. I really want to know what people, what their lives are like, what businesses they're in, and how a congressperson who actually cares for their district could help make that life easier. So ohmike.org. Thanks.
Great. Yeah, and we will try to get Mike back on as the season
sure, anytime.
Goes on. I do want to invite his opponents to be on my show at any time. That's kind of the way we do things.
Absolutely.
On radio.
Yeah, you should meet them. They're both really good people.
I'm sure they are. They're Democrats. never mind. All right. Well, Mike Larson again, running for 4th District.
Yes.
Representative for the United States. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Glenn Coble on A Progressive Life.
From broadcasting legends Charlie Evers and Marianne Michaels. Marianne, what, 30 years in Marion City Schools?
Yes.
Did you ever think you'd live to see the day?
No. I mean, that was atrocious, I think. Absolutely horrible. No, never had anything like that. I'll tell you what, I can't ever think of a student that I didn't like.
Yeah.
And I mean that sincerely.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, because Mary Ellen Withrow was in here last week, and we talked about Hillary, and she said one of the biggest obstacles she will face is because they're harder on women.
They certainly are.
Who get older than men.
Yes.
Yeah. Hillary needs a new hairdo, though, I'll say that.
See, you would never say that about a man.
No.
You would never say a man needs a new hairdo.
And that upsets me, Charlie.
Yeah, why would you say
Hillary,
that?
Hillary, her hair isn't very creative. I mean, sometimes it's just long, straight long. And she could look a million bucks better with a good hairdresser.
Well, why don't you write her a letter and tell her that?
Yes. Well, it would... That's one thing. You know, I like Hillary. Despite all the negative things.
I would love to see a woman as president.
Yeah, they need to be.
Yes.
Yeah, to show up the men for once.
Well, but you know, Great Britain's they've had women as the leaders.
That's right.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions, don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. This is Scott Spears, high above Marion in the WWGH News Chopper. If you see news in Marion, please email us at scott@wwgh1071.com and keep an eye out for the WWGH News Chopper flying high overhead. In the spirit of Halloween and fall, it's now time for a Halloween poem reading right here on WWGH Radio by Charlie Evers, Mary Ann Michaels, Martha Douse, Mary Ellen Withrow, Scott Spears, Marla Gibbs, Mr. McFeely, Pat Carroll, Bud Collins, Hugh Downs, and Robert Guillaume.
Halloween Magic. A bald-headed ghost drank some witch's brew, and on top of his head a strange thing grew. It was pointed and tall and black as a bat, with stringy long hair where his head was flat. The sad little ghost didn't want any hair or a black pointed hat, so he said, "Witch, beware!" Then he chanted some words with a spell-casting switch, and gave Halloween night a bald-headed witch. Barbara M. Hales.
We here at WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are proud to present Magnificent.